Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Molo, how's it? Welcome to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. It is 9 a.m. on a Friday morning. Shabbat Shalom to everybody, and you know what that means. BDL is on your radio waves. This, of course, is on the Chai FM show, and of course, syndicated on my podcast, syndicated on Chai FM, and will be made available to you on all my platforms. Look out for that. Guys, welcome to another show. It's going to be a relatively jam-packed show today as I really look at various issues that are beginning to dominate the news cycle. In fact, you would have heard it in the news report just before the break, that we seem to have moved on in terms of the issues that dominate our news cycle. We somewhat have moved on to a now focus on police brutality and the broader issue around that. There's a very funny tweet I saw on social media. I forget who it was. Basically said, "Oh man, have we moved on from COVID? No one told me this. I still had my COVID lights up. No one told me that it's police brutality season." A funny take on what really is, in real terms, though, a very serious issue. And I must zoom in particularly on two places as I do that. But before I get to that, just a quick reminder of how I structure my show. I'm going to have a quick chat with you now before my first ad break. As we look at the news that was in the past week, what dominated the headlines? What's got us talking? What's got us huddled around our dinner tables, debating, et cetera, et cetera? And I'll provide a bit of analysis on that, you know, like my insight, like what do I think about these? Have these issues even been covered fairly by, you know, the media? So we'll look at that, in the first sort of 10 minutes of the show. And then at 20 past nine, I'm going to have my special guest join us and we're going to have a conversation. Who do I have this week? I have, Mr. Herman Pretorius from the Institute of Race Relations as he discusses with us, a report that the IRR released this week that basically made quite an interesting claim. You know, the claim being that, you know, yes, we've had lockdown over the last, what's it been now, 71 days, but in real terms, South Africa has been under a policy lockdown for the last 10 years. That's a very interesting claim made by the IRR in that regard. I'm going to ask Herman to flesh that out for us when I have him on at 9:20. And then, as always, we end the show by looking at what we can expect in the news week ahead. And yes, you never forget, we will then reveal who the Moomish of the week is going to be. So you can look forward to that later on in the show. So guys, I'm going to take my first ad break now and I'll see you shortly after these messages.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the BDL show, the podcast version that is syndicated on Chai FM. Shout out to everybody at Chai FM and the production team who are holding it down with me. Morning, good morning, good morning, and welcome to it. Let me hop straight into it because, you know, as we always do on the show, I devote the first 10 minutes of it to discussing essentially what's been making the headlines. And for me, the biggest issues as we sort of wean ourselves off coronavirus and what has been in some cases even the scaremongering around it. The biggest issues have been, of course, the court action that has been a major boon, I think, for civil liberties in South Africa. I mean, you have a court case this week, three prominent ones, if anything, that were won by three civic society organizations that took the state on this week. The first I'll raise is one called, or led by an advocate, De Beer, in conjunction with a group called Liberty Fighters. Now, they basically took on the state in terms of essentially the regulations of the lockdown. And they won. They won their case where, the judge in the Gauteng division of the High Court essentially said, you know, the rationale behind the lockdown is not what was contested in that particular case, But the regulations that were then promulgated by the Cocteau minister, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, were unconstitutional and invalid. Those are the judge's words. Unconstitutional and invalid, which is a massive, massive indictment to basically place on a minister, arguing that the, in terms of the judgment, that the decisions made seem to be irrational in nature. And remember, all decisions by the state are constitutionally required to be founded in reason and ration. They should make sense. And not only make sense, they should be aligned to the constitutional order that we live in South Africa. We don't live under a society, rather, that is run by politicians. We live in a society which is run by a constitution, per se, to which politicians are the custodians of it that we elect as the citizenry. Thus, you know, you would think at least there should be an accountability chain that stems from that. But we've seen under the lockdown how politicians can appropriate from themselves more and more powers, at times even against the will of the very people that they said to govern. And the judge essentially eviscerated that. They eviscerated that idea that politicians can make willy-nilly decisions and arbitrary decisions at times. And more importantly, in terms of the judgment itself, irrational decisions, calling those unconstitutional and invalid. And of course, the order that was then made by the judge was that, you know, the Cocteau minister, Minister Dlamini-Zuma, had 14 days from the date of that judgment, excuse me, to amend those particular regulations and republish them. That is what the order itself said. So it suspended the judgment, calling these regulations unconstitutional and invalid for 14 days to give the minister the time to republish, or rather amend and republish those regulations. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what exactly the state, because now the latest being that the government has opted to take this under review, or rather to contest it, in a higher court, you know, to basically, I'm trying to think of the word, to appeal this in a higher court. So that's what the government has now decided to do, which is a weird thing to try and argue, or rather to try and do, that you have a politicians who would rather appeal what on the face value seems to be a rational request by the courts for them to be rational. A state would rather appeal that and literally use yours and my money, state funds, to do this, then to actually heed the call by the courts to act in a rational manner. So I would love to see how this plays out in the court, as of course the government appeals this ruling and indicates that it will take it under appeal. So that I think will be an interesting one to watch, as it sort of becomes a courts versus the government essentially battle. So it'll be interesting to watch. But I want to move on to the other big issue that we saw develop, and this one I'll devote a bit more time to. And it happened both in America and in South Africa, but I'll begin in America because it has been where the headlines have been most dominant, stemming from the murder of George Floyd at the hands of the police. A video, of course, going viral across the world of a police officer pinning him down, using his knee and having his knee really on his neck area for about 9 minutes. And of course, this causes an outrage, which initially we saw, rightly, by the way, communities across Minneapolis, especially the Black American community, rise up and say, this is unacceptable. The levels of police brutality in our communities is just unacceptable. And they were largely initially very peaceful protests organized by the local communities. But what happened since then? And what happened initially, even in that point, was that you then started seeing various groupings, which were identified by the actual local communities themselves as not being from that community, infiltrating and beginning a riotous rampage of looting and violence in the name of George Floyd. And these were largely, if you look at the makeup of what we're seeing at the moment, taken over by what seems to be disaffected youth who in one guys or the other have been convinced that the society they live in is evil and ought to be challenged, and an outright radical leftist infiltration, a particular group called Antifa, ironic name, you know, standing for anti-fascist, but their methods are rather fascist in themselves. You know, these are individuals often clad in black, who cover their faces, carry baseball bats and all sorts of weapons, at so-called protests in order to be disruptive, and to enact violence to get their way. And we've now seen these essentially pop up across U.S. communities across that country, you know, and we're seeing, you know, riotous looting and a violent rampage in that part of the world. And it must be said, the media in the U.S. bears a responsibility for goading some of this on, you know, by suggesting over the years that young people live in a society that's out to get them in one way or the other. Either, you know, because the media, there's very partisan. So, you know, you'll have some who say, oh, you know, the Trump presidency is out to just destroy your lives. Resist, resist. Or, you know, the state is out to get you. Resist, resist. And we're seeing an expression of that in real terms as people now come onto the streets to resist this. But there's no coherence. There's no coherence. There's no sense of, okay, if we're saying that the state is out to quote unquote get us, what do we do about it? We're not hearing that, which is symptomatic even of the fact that even as the violence and the looting and the destruction of private property goes on, nobody can honestly say that a list of perhaps coherent demand has been brought forward. And I use the word coherence on purpose because the one demand that has cropped up and is the loudest call so far is that for cities should the cities and administrations across the country should, quote, defund the police. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that ever being taken seriously? Can you imagine? I mean, you shouldn't, and you really shouldn't. Nobody should. But in the leftist and Democrat circles of the U.S., this call is being taken seriously. It's being given legitimacy. And it's a weird thing to watch, even as these riotous mobs are, you know, destroying businesses, looting storefronts, that even in that situation, corporate America is backing this and pandering to the mob. You think elected representatives will come out and condemn the violence, but they don't. On both sides of the political divide in America, whether Republican or Democrat, I mean, Marco Rubio, a Republican, supported these sort of demonstrations. The Democratic mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, came out and kneeled before the mob. And Hollywood celebrities are praising and even funding this mob, even as they ironically live behind high walls and behind private security. And who suffers? So far, it's been ordinary Americans, the law-abiding ones who have now had to hunker down in their homes as the streets are taken over by lawlessness. So this is one to watch. This is definitely one to watch because I get the impression as a last thought that this has ever increasingly little to do with police brutality and more to do with challenging, you know, either Donald Trump as a president. And by the way, I'm not saying I like or hate him. I'm just making an observation here. Or the structures, the institutions that actually allow people to disagree peacefully, which is the political institutions in America. There seems to be a pushback against those institutions, if anything. So this is one to watch. Oh, I lost track of time. Let me take a quick ad break. And after the break, I'm going to have my guest join us, Mr. Herman Pretorius from the Institute of Race Relations.
This is the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
Guys, welcome back to the BDL show. I'm your favorite fat boy, Big Daddy Liberty. Before the break, I was talking about police brutality in America. And the breakdown of the institutions there. And I'll pick that conversation up after my interview now with a very special guest, someone who I think I've had on the show before. I can't remember. But I must introduce him right now. Herman Pretorius. Herman, welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Good morning, Big Daddy. I am doing excellently. And yourself?
I am very, very good. Herman, I think I want us to jump straight into it because I introduced it before the break to the listeners as to what we're going to be talking about. And it's a very interesting claim that the Institute of Race Relations has made in its latest report, basically suggesting that, you know, we've had a lockdown in South Africa for over 10 years, over and above the current one that we've currently seen. Specifically, you guys mentioned a policy lockdown. Now, before we get into that, just give me a second here. I want to ask you perhaps the direct question. You know, when did South Africa enter then this lockdown? You know, what do you guys actually mean?
Well, let's ask ourselves, what is a lockdown? A lockdown is when the government says to businesses or some businesses that they can't operate, to citizens that they don't have specific freedoms. It's essentially when the government intrudes on the constitutional rights and the freedoms, the hard-won freedoms, I might add, of the citizenry. I mean, that's essentially what a lockdown is. It's locking down things that otherwise would be operational. And if the question is then, when did we enter lockdown? I'm afraid the answer is not the 26th of March, 2020. The answer is approximately 10 years ago. Because 10 years ago, government started interfering in the economy to such an extent that they started locking down policy areas of freedom, and especially economic freedom. And I think our friends in the red overalls were very wise in choosing their name as the EFF, the Economic Freedom Fighters. The problem is when they say it, they are not being completely honest, because we need to fight for economic freedom in this country. Economic freedom is not something that all South Africans have, but the reason we don't have that economic freedom is because we entered an economic lockdown about 10 years ago, when black economic empowerment, a failed policy, an objectively failed policy, started really having its impact, when the state started ramping up spending after the 2008-09 crisis beyond what was affordable and sensible at the time, when the liberal markets that so performed great under the Mbeki years and the Mandela years, showing 3, 4, 5% growth, that was when we had the most liberal markets. When that changed, we entered lockdown.
Now, you say when that changed, which suggests that there was maybe a shift in the nature of our politics, and specifically a shift maybe in the ideology that you know, guides those politics. I mean, you mentioned, for example, the earlier Mandela and really the Mbeki years. Those seem to be maybe just face value, and maybe for someone listening, I'll put it to you that those seem to be almost different in nature, in terms of the political outlook. Although it's the same ANC, if I'm to be honest, but it does seem to be like there was a difference back then. What should South Africans then perhaps learn from the lockdown about even the 10-year one that you mentioned, about politics and ideology? Does it matter, and did it shift things for us?
Yes, I definitely think it didn't. And if we look just at the historical facts, between 1996 and 2007, the ANC had a broadly capitalist approach, a broadly free market approach, and we saw the effects of that. Now, the Institute of Race Relations was very critical, saying that of the Mbeki economic policy, saying it didn't go far enough in terms of providing real economic freedom to people. But, I mean, compared to what was later to come in the decade after that, if we only had known, we would have perhaps been more charitable. But that's the thing about being firmly dedicated to principle, is you assess from that point of view. And in 1992, Mandela really brought about a gear change, no pun intended, saying that the ANC will govern as a pragmatic, social democratic government, not a communist one, that led to this liberalization of markets, the improvement of livelihoods, 10 permanent houses built for every shack built in those first 10 years of democracy. And then two things happened in 2007, 2008, 2009. The change of leadership of the ANC from the Mbeki era to the Zuma era, with the Communist Party really backing the change there and getting some hands on the levers of economic policy. And then the economic world crisis, obviously giving a good reason to ramp up state expenditure and state involvement in the economy. What should South Africans learn from the big lockdown and even this little lockdown? Ideology matters. Ideology matters. It is that thing that is the difference between how you approach suffering or economic hardship in a country. It's not some airy-fairy abstract theory that we at the Institute of Race Relations come up because we've got nothing better to do. It is the understanding, the way of looking at the world. And we saw in this small lockdown powerfully how the state's ideology of saying there's a crisis, we need to be in charge, we need to have centralized control, rather than trusting the people, rather than giving freedom, they took power. And now, from the long lockdown and the small lockdown, South Africans should learn ideology matters. And if you don't understand ideology, what happens in the country will always surprise and upset and wrongfoot you.
I must jump in then and actually ask the direct question, because I do raise it on this show at times, but maybe you can crystallize it for us. Why does ideology matter, number one? And maybe jump straight into what is then the ideology that drives those politicians in this country who have been given, by the vote, of course, but given access to state power and the levers of state power. What is their ideology? We often hear a lot about something called the National Democratic Revolution, which underpins the ANC. But what is that, and why should we even care about it?
So on your first question, what is ideology? I think, you know, it essentially boils down to what is the role of the government. If you are on the left of the economic spectrum, you might have very bona fide reasons for holding this ideology, but your ideology is that more state involvement in the economy is a good thing. Now, if you're on the right of the economic spectrum, you say, no, the less the state gets involved, the better for the economy. So if it's the lens, the prism through which a political leader looks at the world, it is the language of politics they speak. It is how they think the state and the government should act. That is the simple explanation, because we often hear, oh, can't we just all get along, get rid of ideology and get to solutions? Well, no. That is like trying to bake a cake without a recipe, or that is trying to build a car without a plan, or driving to a holiday without a destination or a roadmap. Ideology is that roadmap. And what does it mean to politicians in power? Well, you get a whole spectrum. But really, to my mind, the fundamental choice that South Africans must make is between more state control and less state control. And that means, how much say will a politician have over your life? Let's say you live in Pofadder, a lovely little town that is so far away from civilization, but it's still, you know, quite beautiful there. Let's say you live in Pofadder. Why would a government official in Pretoria or a parliamentarian in Cape Town have more say over your life, your priorities, your child's schooling, your business rates, your way of approaching life in your community than you yourself? The thing is, South Africans must either trust themselves to understand the problems, the challenges of their communities, or they must trust the politicians. And if they trust the politicians, I think it's a mistake. But secondly, that is the National Democratic Revolution. The National Democratic Revolution that you mentioned is this blueprint that the ANC has, since the 1960s, dedicated and reaffirmed itself to every 5 years, as recently as 2017. And when we say the National Democratic Revolution, people immediately think, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. No, it's just ideology. It's the way of looking at the world. It's the roadmap that the ANC has for where it wants to get the country. And fundamentally, all political parties have that. You know, all political parties should have an idea what they want to do with the country. And the ANC is so honest about theirs. The National Democratic Revolution is a way of getting from colonialism to socialism. That is it. And it is put honestly and clearly by the ANC and their tripartite alliance partners themselves. And I think it was France or Gareth van Onselen or Sargon who said, when a politician shows you who they are, believe them the first time. And President Ramaphosa, as early as 2017, July 2017, says the success of the ANC is married to the success of the National Democratic Revolution. And what does that mean? State control, antagonism towards the private sector, a greater and greater role of the state in the lives of the people. And I think if you want a 30-day or a 10-week free trial of the National Democratic Revolution, we're living through it now.
Now, Herman, this is all like fascinating, and perhaps for someone who is, you know, this is the first time being initiated by, if this was the first time someone has been initiated to the idea that the ANC is governed by what seems to sound like a socialist doctrine, the National Democratic Revolution, you might have someone then say, but hang on, Herman, no. You know, this lockdown, this particular, now we're on day 71 of this particular lockdown, has been about COVID, right? It's not about a socialist revolution. Of course government should take over all of these roles and powers and stifle our freedoms because we're trying to fight COVID. And with you now saying that, you know, it's been a 10-year thing, if anything, of the state, again, trying to take over more aspects of our lives and institute more, policies that accord the state and really politicians more power, that's also fine because, you know, we need politicians. And that person will then say, but I don't see the link because we have a president who is one of the richest persons in the world. Surely he's capitalist. Where is the socialism that you talk about?
Well, in the case of Mr. Ramaphosa, I think we might call him a mixed socialist because there is this element of capitalist business acumen that clings to him and his reputation as someone who really understands finance and economics. But there's a difference between talking the talk and walking the walk. Let's look at the walk that President Ramaphosa has been walking. Expropriation without compensation. National health insurance. What does expropriation without compensation mean? You don't, by guarantee, own your property. It's as simple as that. Whatever the reasons, whatever the fanciful theories, expropriation without compensation means what you own, you might not actually own. Beware. Secondly, national health insurance. That is just saying that you, citizen in Pofadder or citizen in Pretoria or citizen in Johannesburg, you can't choose your health care. The state must choose it for you. Then we have to look at prescribed assets. Again, it's the state saying to the citizen, you might have saved your entire life. You might have saved to have a pension. You might have worked hard, invested your money, been responsible, been sensible, lived by the rules. And we taxed your salary the first time around. But you see, we have now run out of your tax money and we need more money because socialism, to everyone's surprise, is very expensive. And now we need more money. Where are we going to get your money? Well, there's this thing called Regulation 28, which essentially gives the government the power to say, to tell you where you must invest your savings. And they want you to invest it in Eskom because Eskom needs money. They want you to invest it in South African Airways because South African Airways needs money. PRASA, they want you to invest it there because it needs money. Now, EWC, NHI, prescribed assets, these aren't accidents of policy. These are direct results of the NDR, the National Democratic Revolution, where it says, you know what? We think the state should be at the center of life in South Africa. And I think that's wrong. And I think, Big Daddy, you think that's wrong. And I think most people instinctively think that is wrong. And if you ever wonder why it is wrong, look at your child's life. Look at your child if you are blessed and lucky to have one. And ask yourself, that child has a parent. Is it you or is it the government? Under the National Democratic Revolution, it isn't you. You only look after that child. Now apply that same reasoning to your life. Who is in charge of your life, you or the government? If it's the government, then it's the NDR. If it's you, then it is freedom and liberalism. So this question, why is this NDR thing, and to the person trying to understand this firsthand, you must ask yourself, if you look at President Ramaphosa, he looks to my mind, like a nice man. I think it's funny when he couldn't put a mask on right, because I've struggled with putting a mask on. He's very nice. He's very likable. But what has his government done? What has his government done to your role in your own life or the life of your child? That is where the truth lies.
Aaron, I must take a quick ad break. After the break, I'm going to ask you the question, now that you've sort of broken it down for the listeners, what do we then do to oppose the creeping hand of the state that is controlling all of these aspects of our lives? How do we reclaim our liberty? How do we then oppose the National Democratic Revolution? So my conversation with Herman Pretorius will continue after the break.
Stay tuned for the Big Daddy Liberty Show on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back to the Big Daddy Liberty Show. As I'm still in conversation with Herman Pretorius from the Institute of Race Relations in our last sort of 7 minutes of our conversation. Herman, before the break, you had broken down the importance of ideology and how often South Africans, when we look at our politicians, we don't actually understand or pay attention to who they are ideologically, how their ideological motives would therefore look or translate in how they govern the country. And you broke it down for us in terms of the ANC, which may surprise a lot of people that they're actually governed or led by a socialist and really communist doctrine called the National Democratic Revolution, which you mentioned that they reaffirm themselves to at every elective conference, including, by the way, under the current president of the Republic. I then mentioned to you that, well, it seems weird that we say they're socialists when the president is this multi-billionaire. And you rightly, I think, broke it down insofar as saying, well, hang on. It's the idea of almost appearances versus reality. The appearances on the one hand, yes, business savvy and fabulously rich from that. But the reality is he actually became rich off of government diktat, or government and political control. The idea, for example, of certain legislation rewarding certain people simply because of their proximity to politics and not because of their business savviness. That is a very interesting point to bring us. And then, tying it together for us, why you argue that we've had a 10-year lockdown, especially on policy issues, and not just this current, where are we now, 71 days of lockdown at the moment. I have to bring us to the point of, if this is what you're saying is happening, and that South Africans, as families, as individuals, do not have the sort of control over their lives, over their families' conduct, as they should have in a free, prosperous society, what do we do about it then? Like, how do we push back against things like the National Democratic Revolution? How can people oppose these essentially bad ideas?
Before I answer that very, very important question, I just realized in the break, I'm quite self-critical actually, and I realized that I didn't properly answer your previous question. I rambled on like a politician, so let me quickly answer it. You asked me, wasn't this COVID lockdown important to slow down the virus? And there's an argument to be made, yes. But then you must ask yourself, how many Collins causas were there around the world? Where governments during this lockdown beat their citizens to death? How many countries in the world banned e-commerce, the only possible safe form of commerce in the time of a pandemic? The thing is, this wasn't just a lockdown. This was an NDR lockdown. In the UK, we see a lockdown that has elicited a lot of criticism. But there you see a government making many mistakes, but at least saying, we want to move back to a place where you can have your freedom. And I don't think we're seeing that. In fact, the government in South Africa is going to court to keep its regulations in place, is appealing a decision by the High Court to keep its regulations in place. So how do we know this lockdown wasn't just COVID-19? Well, look at the facts. The facts will tell you that this government was driven by ideology because they silenced the medical experts who told them that this wasn't necessary. They silenced the business owners, small business owners, saying, you are cutting off my lifeline. And then they said, well, class suicide. We will restructure this economy. Radical economic transformation, NHI, EWC, further policies to empower the state. And now the question, what can South Africans do about this? And the thing is, I want to tell a quick historical anecdote. In 1985, P.W. Botha, with his index finger pointing upwards to the skies, said he will not cross the Rubicon. He will not disband his forces. He will not, and I quote, lead white South Africa down the road of abdication and suicide. And the Institute of Race Relations is very proud that we even then opposed racial discrimination, and we've been doing it for almost a century now. But what you must understand is 10 years after P.W. Botha made that speech, Nelson Mandela walked onto the pitch at Ellis Park with 40,000 white South Africans mainly chanting his name. Why do I tell that story? Because change can happen. What is it that changed South Africa between 1985 and 1995? It is you, the citizen. It is you that demanded better. We live in a democracy. The thing that we had, or at least that white people had in 1992, was the opportunity to, at the ballot box, reject apartheid. And as a white South African and Afrikaner, I am proud that my fathers, my mothers, my aunts, my uncles did that. They said no to this. And a chance they had was a chance to say no and to make it a powerful no. And we have that same chance as well. We can say no to the government. We can say no to the government at elections. We can say no to the government when it comes to the courts. And if we can't get the opportunity to say no, we can demand that opportunity and tell them, this is a democracy. You have only the power we as the citizens give you. And you will give us the chance to say no to you, no to EWC, no to NHI, no to prescribed assets, no to spending money that can go to schools and hospitals on yet another Eskom bailout. And you do that by getting involved. If you've never written a letter to a minister or a councillor or an MP, start now. If you don't get an answer within a week, write that same letter and send it again. If you don't get an answer within a year, write that same letter. If you don't get an answer, ask your friends to start writing with you. If you don't get an answer, go to the journalists, go to the press, go to the IRR, go to AfriForum, go to Solidarity, go to Section 27. Keep on saying no to this. Keep on saying yes to your liberties. Then you write to the minister. Then you write to the president. Then you sue the president for not responding to you. Then you, the opportunities to say no, the right and the, to fight for the right to say no is the most important right in a democracy. We have that. And the only reason we will lose this fight to the NDR is if we don't say no. Evil triumphs when good people do nothing. We cannot afford to do nothing.
And I must say this, it's maybe a theme perhaps then of the week, because on the Big Daddy Liberty Show, on Wednesday, the online version, I had a frank conversation with my viewers and the people who follow my show to say that, you know, there seems to be, because we only have 2 minutes left, Herman, but there seems to be a battle that South Africans need to wage if we are going to win, the battle of ideas, the idea that at a society at a point of crisis like we are at the moment, it is he who injects the greatest volume of ideas into that society who will then sway that society in one way or the other. And the NDR is an idea being promulgated by our politicians at the moment, which seeks to sway us in the direction of more state control, essentially a socialist dystopia, if I can describe it as that. And you need, therefore, citizens to maybe push back on the other side and say, no, actually, we want to live in a free, prosperous, non-racial and property-earning society. That's the ideas that move us in that direction. We should inject into society and sway us in the other direction. The Big Daddy Liberties show is trying to do that on one hand. But Herman, as I said, we only have like literally 45 seconds. How do people get in touch with you, and how do people get in touch with this particular report that you guys have put down now that details how we've been in a 10-year policy lockdown?
On the IRR's website, www.irr.org.za reports, you'll find the 10-year lockdown there. And Sihle, let me end with a quote.
Yep.
Let me make the songs of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws. We should start singing the songs of freedom, and then the politicians will listen to the songs and realize that the laws won't control us if we have our hearts on freedom.
Fantastic. That was Mr. Herman Pretorius from the Institute of Race Relations, and their latest report looking at the 10-year lockdown. If you're interested in that, you can find it on the IRR website. I'm going to take a quick break. After the break, we wrap up the show and we discuss who the Moomish of the Week is for this week.
You are listening to the Big Daddy Liberty Show.
As we always end the show, we always end it on a, shall I call it a funny note? As we look at who the Moomish or the loser of the week is, this week for me is a bit of a no-brainer as to who it is. It has to go to, before I get to that, a special thanks to our guest once again, Herman Pretorius. And again, I must remind you that you can find that report that he mentioned on the IRR website. Okay. I stalled for a moment. Who is the Moomish of the week this week? It has to go to the Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs Minister. That's Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Oh, what a week she has had. Literally loss after loss after loss in court. From the loss that she suffered at the hands of Advocate De Beer and the Liberty Fighters, which basically saw the regulations of her declaration of a national state of disaster being called unconstitutional and invalid, which even our guest mentioned that she's now appealing because of the power-hungry nature of what those regulations do for politicians. But she lost essentially that case in court with a bloody nose, so to speak. The other cases that she has lost this week, there are two others, was one that was brought forward by an organization, a civic society organization called Sakeleka, which basically looked at the issue of the permitting regime that the regulations sought to introduce, the idea that any and all businesses must run a gauntlet of applying to politicians for permits in order to do what they've been doing already for years and years and years in conducting their business. They lost that case also, with the courts declaring this permitting regime essentially unconstitutional. Again, a major victory for the freedoms and liberties of ordinary citizens, in this case, business owners. And the last one, the more interesting one for me, was a case brought forward by AfriForum, again, another civic society organization, where they challenged the idea that the state should have the right to abduct you from your home and place you in a quarantine facility if they suspect or if you are found to have COVID-19. The judge in that court case, you know, absolutely aghast at this idea, said no, the state does not have and should not have the ability nor the right to essentially forcibly quarantine people at these facilities if they have their own means of self-isolation at home. Again, another victory against the overreach of government essentially trying to use force on citizens. So those are three significant losses for a single minister really representing a larger government to endure. Therefore making our Moomish of the week Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Well, there you go. Guys, I must wrap up the show and end it over here. Remember, the Big Daddy Liberty Show and Big Daddy Liberty, you can follow on all your social media. That's Big Daddy Liberty on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course the Big Daddy Liberty Show or Big Daddy Liberty on YouTube. Shout out to the team at Chai FM for putting the show together, and I will see you guys next week on the BDL Show.